that was very well put, to grow closer to God and to one another. And as we grow closer to God, we will grow closer to one another. In fact, that's the only way we can grow closer to one another, is by growing closer to God. So we're entering a new book tonight. We won't be here on this one for very long, I don't think. The book of Ruth. Anybody bring answers to questions? Ethan. You raised your hand. Outline the book, writing a one-line summary for each chapter.
Chapter 1, Elimelech, Naomi, Mahlon, and Chilion went to Moab. Mahlon and Chilion marry. The men die, and Naomi and Ruth return.
Excellent.
Chapter 2, Boaz shows kindness to Ruth because of the kindness she showed to Naomi. Chapter 3, Ruth follows Naomi's plan, but there is a problem. Chapter 4, crisis averted. Boaz and Ruth marry and have a child.
Crisis averted is what you said. Yes, okay. I thought, I heard Christ is something, and I wasn't sure what that was, but I didn't think it was biblical. All right, right, right. Anybody else outline the book, writing a one-line summary for each chapter? And John, anybody want to jump up and down? And no? Okay. Here's what I did. Chapter 1, Ruth commits herself to God. Chapter 2, Ruth commended for loving God. Chapter 3, Ruth appeals to the law of the Lord. And then chapter 4, Ruth added to the lineage of the Lord. Anybody else? Something else? Not extremely important. Question number 5, we're skipping. Question number 5. When? George Bosworth.
I did not bring my questions.
That was question 4.
What? Oh, right. Question 4. When? Okay. When?
In the time of the judges.
In the time of the judges. Deja vu. Okay. In the time of the judges. Here we are. Who wrote Ruth? Anyone? I know who it wasn't. It wasn't Ruth. Right? Chapter 4, the end of it, verse 17, he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. We're talking about her grandson here. Now, these are the generations of Perez, and Perez was born Hezron, and so on and so forth. So we understand that this wasn't Ruth that wrote it. Some people say it might have been Samuel. Yeah. What? Don't worry about that. Yes, I am. Thank you. Do that. Some people say Samuel. I don't know. The last few verses of chapter 4 seem to indicate that David was king. Otherwise, it would be, I'm not sure that it would be important to include David. It seems that David was king here, and not a necessary inference. But if David was king, then it wasn't Samuel who wrote it, because Samuel died before David actually became king. So I don't have much to say there. When was Ruth written? I know when it was not written. Right? In Ruth's lifetime, apparently, because of chapter 4, the end of it goes on and talks about all the way up to David. And again, that seems to be when it was written, sometime during that time. I don't know. When did the events of Ruth occur? In the days of the judges. I know when they did occur. In Ruth's lifetime. Yeah. In the days when the judges governed. Now that's interesting. Why not just add 4 more chapters in Judges?
There's so many lessons to be learned from Ruth.
We'll speculate no matter what the answer is here. We'll speculate. Yeah, you're so many. I'll tell you what, when you read the book of Judges, and then you read the book of Ruth, do you see the difference that I see? In the book of Ruth, just in dialogue alone, God, the Lord has, God Almighty, on and on and on and on and on and on, and it goes, and you see these people who are people who have faith in God. Totally different story. I don't know why Ruth was not included in Judges, but I know this, that we are a separate people, and when God has His book, guess where the people who are doing righteous things and trusting in God are not? with the people who are like the people in Book of Judges for the most part, right? Okay. What is the theme of Ruth? Anyone?
God's providential care.
God's providential care. Working out his plan. And working out his plan.
There's a true difference between Ruth and Judges. Judges is like chaos and mayhem. Ruth is, God's still working out his plan.
Yeah. Right. So God's providential care and working out his plan. Anybody else? I don't know the answer. I really don't know what the answer to the theme of Ruth is. We can postulate his providence. I know there's one word that comes up basically more than any other word, and that's the word redemption, or some various form of the word redemption. Redeemer, 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 23 times. That's as much as the word Lord, Almighty, and God put together come up. In fact, the same, 23 and 23, okay? For example, one of the places you see this word redeemer is in chapter 4, verse 14. After Ruth has given birth to a son, then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you without a," and my version will use the word redeemer. Does anybody have something else besides redeemer?
Near kinsman.
Near kinsman.
I have a footnote
that says redeemer. My footnote says, guess what? Kinsman. Nearest relative, right. Okay, so this word, though, is the root for whether it says closest relative or whatever it says, the root is redeemer. Redeem, okay? We'll talk more about that. Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, and of for your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him. I find that interesting. What's the name of this book? But who's the book about? Some people will say the book is primarily a story of Naomi. I tend to lean in this direction. So, chapter 1. Chapter 1, verse 1. It came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land, and the certain men of Bethlehem and in Judah went to sojourn, a certain man, I should say, went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of one was Orpah, the name of the other Ruth, and they lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and also her husband. We'll stop here. We're going to talk about the story of Naomi. By the way, that was a faux pas, but do you know who is named after Orpah?
Oprah.
Right? And apparently on her birth certificate, the word Orpah is, but they mispronounced it. Yeah. So apparently her name really is Orpah, but they mispronounced it.
Misspelled it.
No. They mispronounced it.
I thought they
misspelled it. No, I just read this just the other day, and apparently her name on the birth certificate is Orpah, but they have mispronounced it. It's either that or they misspelled it, but what I read is... Anyway, it doesn't really matter. That's unimportant.
Yes.
No, let's argue about... No. Okay.
It does say that Oprah's mother knew a lot more about the Bible than Oprah.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, look at the difference between...
Than her. Right. Okay. 2 points to be made from this real quickly. Number one, this man, it said in verse 1, he went to sojourn in the land of Moab. And then in verse 2, he entered into the land of Moab. and remained there. And then verse 3, they spent how many years there? 10 years. Now, quickly, Moab, related to Israel, right? But is that the promised land? Okay, so keep that in mind just for a second. If you would ask this guy, of course he's dead and the question isn't here, but let's speculate for a minute. If you would ask this guy, hey, what's your plans? Plan on staying here 10 years? Or later on, after 10 years had gone by, and he walked up to him, hey, you plan on keeping your family there for 10 years? What do you think his answer would have been? Probably not. Because a good Jew does what? Goes back to Israel, right, to begin with. Okay, be careful to make wise decisions at the beginning. At the beginning. I'm not saying that his decision was not wise, but this is the way, you know, life happens this way. Next thing you know, you've been there for 10 years, and you had no plans in the beginning. I mean, just, it's interesting the way God's providence works. But at the same time, we end up thinking, wow, how did that happen to me? So make careful plans in the very beginning, because you don't know, you might stick yourself there for 10 years. At the same time, it says that the sons took for themselves Moabite women. Was that wise? It was not lawful. It was not wise. It was not lawful. But, I mean, hey, they got Ruth out of the deal, didn't they?
It's something that proved itself beneficial after the fact, not beforehand.
Yeah. And who didn't they get out of the deal? Or who left? Orpah. The trend is, by the way, so it's a 50-50 chance. You know, you might get one, you might not. I'll just go ahead and, is it a 50-50? Is that the pattern, 50-50? No. No, the trend is down. They, quote unquote, got lucky with Ruth. I don't think luck has anything to do with it. You understand that.
The ends, as we say, the end does not justify the means.
That's right. That's right. The end, as John says, afterward it proved to be. But man, oh man, what if it hadn't?
That's right.
Too many people find themselves in that situation. Parents, be careful about what choices you subject your own children to. The mom and dad, the dad there, said, we're going over there, and this is what happened. You know, dads, be careful. Moms, be careful also. By the way, I won't say any names, but you might be able to guess who I'm talking about. Somebody who was among this congregation up until not very long ago, who was married to an unbelieving man, told me, in the presence of her husband, that if she were to decide again, she would decide not to. And her husband knows it. That's impressive. That's hard. But it also shows you that this person, as much as they're faithful now, it's been a long and hard road for them, hasn't it? Okay, so let's continue in the text. If you have a comment or question, we'll keep going here. This is about, we're talking about Naomi to begin with, all right? Verse 6, she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab. For she heard that the land of Moab, the Lord had visited his people and giving them food. And you know the story. There's a little back and forth there. She says, go home, children. And they say, no, we won't. In verse 11, Naomi said, return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, even if I should have a husband tonight and also bear you sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Stop here for a minute. If you're unfamiliar with the Old Testament, this is based on what is called levirate marriage. And that's a Latin word which means brother-in-law. They would marry their brother-in-laws if their husbands died. That was Old Testament law. It was also spread throughout of all the ancient East. Okay, sounds weird to us. If your husband dies, then under the law you were basically obligated to marry your brother-in-law, so that your brother-in-law could have a child. You two would have a child, and that child's name and inheritance would go to the deceased husband. Anyway. So that's assumed in here. Naomi's saying, look, you want to hang around and wait for me to produce you another son so that you can marry this one? Now listen to her language. If I said I have hope, if I even should have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. And they lift up their voices, and Orpah takes off and goes home. Ruth clings to her. But again, she says, verse 15, behold, sister-in-law, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Ruth says, no, 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 no. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then they both go to Bethlehem. And look what happens in Bethlehem, verse 19. When they had come to Bethlehem, all the city stirred up because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, do not call me Naomi, which means pleasant, but call me Mara, which means bitter. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly against me. I went out full, but the Lord brought me back empty. Why do you call me pleasant? Since the Lord has witnessed against me, the Almighty has afflicted me. Does she sound happy? Can we sympathize? She's lost everything. And she's saying, God has done this to me. And she is not a happy camper, as we say. So, chapter 2 and chapter 3, she plays the matchmaker, as mothers are wont to do. And then, chapter 4, they get married. Ruth has a child, verse 14. Then the woman said to Naomi, blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, that his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life, a sustainer of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. So, what we see in the life of Naomi, we don't read much about her, except at the beginning and the end. But in the beginning it's about her, and in the end it's about her. So, she has this life, it plummets to the depths of despair, and in the end, she rises back out of it. Let me ask a question. You might have a comment or question. Was Naomi right in her assessments in chapter 1? In chapter 1, God has done this to me. God, the Almighty, has left me abandoned. God has done everything, all this. I would answer no.
In some way.
Did he allow it?
Yeah.
Obviously. But what's she saying? She's saying, yeah, you know, God's behind everything here. That seems to be what she's getting at. God's behind this, directly or effectively, more than just allowing it, okay? But in reality, that wasn't the case. God wasn't doing it to her. God was allowing it to happen, obviously.
But she can't see his whole picture.
And so she should not have said everything that she said.
Whatever her assessment is, there's something going on here that Ruth decides, looks at her alternatives. I can go back to my mother, father, friends, all these other people in the land I know, or I can go with this woman. And she makes the right decision.
Yeah.
And she makes it, it's not based on Naomi's assessment of how God, I mean, there's something about Naomi here that has attracted Ruth. And maybe those things,
yeah.
Ruth decides, there's evil over there, and this is good, so even, you know, I'm going to go.
Yeah,
this
both,
way.
Right.
But there's something about the character of both of them that kind of comes out here.
Yeah, comes right. Together, and they end up making the right decisions. By the way, I don't want to skip over the question. I think the next question is, trace events as they concern Naomi, and then any observations or lessons come to mind. So, concerning Naomi, we've already traced the events. She lost everything. She says, God, and then she gets, quote-unquote, everything back, right? So that's the events. Observations or lessons that come to your mind, lest I do all the talking?
Stay with your people.
Stay with your...
I mean, in a sense, I mean, it's a lesson about the church, too. I mean, she returned
yep.
to a place that was better.
Right. Yeah, in fact, when you... And I tried to pound this home a little bit when we were going through Genesis all the way into the law. Abraham, go to the land, and from there on, the only time that really it's a good thing to leave the land is when they're told by God to leave the land. Otherwise, bad things always happen. Whenever they leave the land, bad things happen. There seems to be, it's not explicitly stated, don't ever leave the land, it's a sin to leave the land. It's not stated that way, but you get the point. God wants you in the land, and any time you go out of the land is a breach of trust. like this. There's a famine in the land. Guess what everybody else had while they were in Israel? Food. But Mahon and or Chilion and the father, Elimelech, went out of the land. Did he actually have to? Not if everybody else had food. I don't want to push this too far, but that does seem to be here. And that's kind of what you're saying. You stay where you stay where you're at, as it were. Okay, so Naomi, any other observations about Naomi, from Naomi? Yeah.
God has a plan for each one of us. We just have to trust in Him, even though times are hard.
Yeah, trust in Him as opposed to try to help Him.
Yeah. Yeah, because we may be called to go it alone.
Yeah.
All of us that are married here.
Yeah.
At some point, going to go it alone.
Right. Somebody is.
Somebody. Yeah. You know, and still trust God. He has a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually the children die after the parents.
Right.
But if one of the spouses won't go it alone, maybe they'll both die in an accident at the same time or whatever, then the children will have to go it alone. Yeah, so was Naomi right in her assessments? If I'm right in understanding that she was somewhat like God is the cause of this, then no, she wasn't right. And that might be a primary point of our story. When we're trying to interpret what's going on in our life, be very careful what you're saying. That's really the point I'm getting at. The confident assertions you're making about God providentially working in your life, good or bad, right? Paul, an inspired apostle, about good things only goes so far as to say, perhaps, perhaps. So we need to be careful in what we're saying. I got my questions all over the place here. And I'm not even on the right page. This is fun. Okay. A little hardship in Naomi's life led to a lot of blessing, didn't it? Where is she? In the end, she is the nanny to who? The grandfather of the man who will become the type of the Savior and who will also receive a promise from God Himself that His throne will be forever. She is the nanny to this person's grandfather. Wow. I mean, that's pretty big. Now I say little hardship. The point is perspective, right? Perspective of earthly trials. Momentary light affliction is producing in us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. Momentary light afflictions. Paul, did you endure momentary light afflictions? No. For the rest of his life, he endured infliction. But what did he call it? Momentary and light, because of in light of what was in the future. And note well, God used her trials. We've been talking about this providence. God used her trials for His glory. Hey, if God can use me for His glory, you know, we tend to think of, yeah, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to preach the gospel and everything's going to be wonderful. I'm going to convert 1,000 people and then I'm going to go over here and we're going to do this and I'm going to be a servant this way. And that's how God's going to use me. If we could choose those things, there's sometimes we wouldn't grow, would we? Right? How did God use Naomi? I'm going to turn your life upside down. I'm going to make you suffer. I'm going to make your life like you have never imagined it. But in the end, you'll be okay and I will have been glorified. So be ready for it if that's what happens. And you notice, here's the funny thing. Naomi, In all likelihood, she didn't know how blessed she was. She never knew. Because she died before David became king. And that's another point. While you're going through the suffering, you're wondering, what in the world's going on here? You'll never know. You might not ever know. You might not ever know. But you have to put your head down and just trust and obey, right? This is my favorite one. Old women. Your husband and two sons die. This is what Gary was just saying. And this applies to the old men too and the young ones also, right? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? It could happen. It could happen. You've got two sons and a husband. What if they both die just like that? What if all of your children die? What are you going to do? Well, the short of it is, you're going to go back to the place where there is, in this context, it was food, right? You're going to go back to the place where there is food. Where do you go for that? Okay, in their day, you go to Israel. It's over there. You could find it on a map with your GPS. Nowadays, it's a different system. But where do we go now? You remember Matthew chapter 7? Don't worry about what you will eat, what you will drink, what you will wear, so on and so forth. Okay, don't worry about it. So where do you go?
Seek where she went, God's people.
Seek His kingdom second after having... No, you seek His kingdom first and He'll provide all these things to you. Where are you going to go? You might stay right here in Philadelphia. You might move to Tennessee. You might go anywhere. I don't know where you're going to go. But wherever you're going, it's more of a state of mind, isn't it? You've got to seek His kingdom first. And God will take care of the rest of this. Naomi's faith, a bright light in the chaos of the dark ages. This woman used the word Lord, Almighty, and God over and over. And in the times of the judges, man alive. That place was a wreck back then. But here's little old Naomi being faithful. She's not losing it. She's not losing it. All this happens to her. She doesn't understand it all, but who's she still talking about? God. Last night I went and visited the church where I was, the church in which is building I was baptized. Got to be careful how you say these things. Okay, so there I was, you know what I'm saying? I was there. Do you know how many people were there last night? Five. One of them is about 82 or 83 years old. When I was growing up, he used to talk about, you know, in the ways of the world, you wouldn't say this man is the brightest bulb on the tree. Okay, but when I was growing up, he would talk about having talked to somebody about God. I talked to somebody about God. I talked to somebody about God. I talked to somebody about God. When we were there last night, he's like, boy, it would be so great if somebody came here, some preacher came here. Because they could go out and talk to people about God and bring them in. What's happened in his... He used to do that. He's gotten tired. I don't know exactly what's happened. But he used to do that. Naomi, she's old. She calls herself old. I don't know what the number is. But she calls herself old. And has she given up? Not at all. She's still doing what she can in God's kingdom, right? If you have a comment or question, please raise your hand. Was it wise for Naomi's husband to have taken her and her children out of the promised land to Moab? We've already said no. No. But here's the question. As long as it was not a sin, how should she have reacted? There's a difference between not wise and sin. Right. So it would lead to it. So it's not wise. It wasn't wise. I don't think you can say it was a sin for them to go to Moab. So let's start. Let's just go right there. And by the way, that's the law of unintended consequences, isn't it? You don't know what's going to happen. So that's one reason you just obey God. No matter as long as it was not sin, how should she have reacted?
Obey.
Right? 1 Peter chapter 3. This doesn't mean she keeps her mouth absolutely shut. She never says anything like, husband, hello, is this the smartest thing we've done today? You know, right? She can say things like that. But if he says, honey, we're going... Then, according to the Bible, verse 3, chapter 1 Peter 3, 1, in the same way, wives, be submissive to your husbands, no matter how silly they are. For in this way, Naomi obeyed Elimelech, calling him Lord. Obviously, that was my paraphrase on that, right? Sarah obeyed Abraham. But the same idea. Husbands, don't put your wives in these situations where they're thinking, you... Right? You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives because they've got brains. On the way up here last night, Marcy said something to me that I had totally not thought of. This is strategic planning we're talking about. And she says, have you considered this? I said, well, she's pretty smart. Right? Naomi's deliverance came through another woman receiving what she herself had lost. Naomi lost her husband. And her deliverance comes through somebody else getting what she lost. And what didn't she do? She didn't grumble at it, did she? Envy would say, jealousy, envy, would say something like that, right? Maybe in a higher pitched voice in this case. Not only did she not rejoice, but she herself facilitated the result. She was the one doing the working in there that brought about. In fact, in verse chapter 3, verse 1, it says, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you?" In all of her loss, she's saying, "I'm thinking about you." Romans 15, 1 says that we ought to bear the burdens of others, of the people who are having weaknesses. In fact, last night on... Oh, no matter Ruth wanted, loved her and wanted to be with her. Somebody made the point, essentially, that I'm making right now earlier. Either John or Gary. This woman, Naomi, she's dynamite. She's a fantastic woman. We need... On Facebook, one of our friends in the Czech Republic put this up. Women of God can never be like women of the world. The world has enough women that are tough. We need women who are tender. There are enough women who are coarse. We need women who are kind. There are enough women who are rude. We need women who are refined. We have enough women of fame and fortune. We need more women of faith. We have enough greed. We need more goodness. We have enough vanity. We need more virtue. We have enough popularity. We need more purity. This is what Naomi is teaching us through these years. Comments or questions on Naomi? I'm basically done with talking about her. Yes?
For all that is there, I think very quickly, I mean, it's only just a couple of chapters here, but there's also character development for her. You know, by the end of chapter 1, what she's basically saying is, I mean, she's saying she's bitter. And what is she bitter about? Her husband and sons make bad decisions. And you know, she left her friends here who recognize her when she gets back. When she left, she had a husband and two healthy unmarried sons. She fulfilled her primary responsibility as an Israelite woman twice to this man. When she comes back, she's lost all of them. And they were probably Naomi's husband taking her where, you know. She comes back, and not only she lost a lot, but that insult to injury, she's got a Moabite woman, you know, trailing on behind her. And I honestly wonder at this point how much appreciation she has for Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she doesn't, God has done these things to me, yet despite this, you know, here I've got the situation, I mean, no, she's, I'm empty, you know, and Ruth's here.
What about me?
You know, you almost get an impression of, we're not having a healthy relationship quite yet, you know, mm-hmm. here. And that changes so quickly for both of them, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Naomi almost instantly recognizes, starts to have a positive attitude about that, you know. Mm-hmm. She was wrong, but call her bitter. She never went there. You know,
either she didn't recognize Ruth's value, or she was blinded to it temporarily by her sorrows.
Or Ruth's history wasn't such to give her much hope for Ruth.
Right.
One way or the other. I mean, this would be a disappointing thing for a mother to have to deal with.
Yeah.
When her sons go off and marry people that it's unlawful. I mean, yeah. And living with that would be very, very hard.
Yeah.
Well, there's two of you. There's a little bit more inclination to take the focus off maybe yourself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, I've got this other person to worry about. Well, that takes some of the worry away from thinking about yourself a little bit.
Should.
Yeah, should.
It's a hard lesson to learn. You know, the longer you're single, the harder it is to think about others when you get married. You know, because when you're single, what are you worried about? Me. I'm worried about me. And then you're 40 years old and you get married, and what are you thinking about? I'm worried about me and her too. You know, be careful. Okay. So back here in... Now we're going to talk about Ruth. Ruth. Right? We pick her up in chapter 1. Verse 8, Naomi says, "Go home." Verse 10, they said to her, "No, but we will surely return with you and your people." But Naomi said, "Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Because I can't provide you husbands." And verse 14, they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death separates you and me. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So they both went to Bethlehem. Verse 1 of chapter 2. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And this is where the story gets exciting, right? It starts to get getting a little hot under the collar now, right? Okay. Having said that, we know the story of Ruth. We know how it turns out. She did not. Ruth didn't know. When she said in verses 16 and 17, I'm going with you, I'm all in, you can't stop me, she did not know what she was getting herself into. There are certain things that she did not go to. She did not go to the certainty of security. You remember she's in the field and they say, stick with my maid so you don't get beaten up because you're a Moabite. She didn't go to the certainty of security, right? She didn't go to the certainty of provision. How are we going to eat? They're poor. She has to essentially go up. She's begging, if you were. She's doing what the poor person does. May I? She is submitting herself. She knows she has no power here. Can I eat some of your food? No certainty of provision. And then no certainty of Boaz. She has no idea what's going on. Her husband, her mother, as far as she knows, it's not going to happen. Who's going to want her? Not only is she a Moabitess, but she's been married. That's not going to happen. So why did she go? Or what does this demonstrate? Faith. She said, you've got Jehovah God. Now we understand this more clearly from chapter 2 because Boaz says to her, verse 12, may your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. She is making a conscious decision about Jehovah. And I don't know but Naomi taught her about Jehovah. She got something about Jehovah, and she got a lot about Jehovah, enough so that she says, I'm giving up Melech, the king of the god of Moab. I'm giving up all my people, my family. I'm giving them all up, and I'm going to a place where I don't even know if I'll be not beaten up. Because of God. That's impressive. That's faith. That's how many people would say, you know, this area over here has all the characteristics that I think God would want of me, but it doesn't have a job. In fact, I might not even get a job while I'm there. Things don't look good. I won't have family and friends, and I won't have this, and I won't have that, so I'm not going to go. How many times would I'm not saying throw reason out the window. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying balance reason with faith. I'll tell you an anecdotal story about myself. When I, 10 years ago, almost in August, 10 years ago in August, I got out of college. I had a job offer. In college, I had been studying my Bible with some other people. Non-believers, and I wanted to help them, and I made this decision. I said, I'm going to try to become a preacher, an evangelist. I'm going to try that. So I end up, of all places, in the middle of Dog Patch Road in Tennessee, the home of the KKK. I'm down there, way there, in the middle of nowhere, literally in a cabin in the middle of a field. That's where I am. Now, I am running out of money, too, at the same time, and I've got this job offer from Neon Optics. It's a telecommunications company. It would have been fantastic. It would have been up here in the Northeast, New England, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, driving through backcountry roads, doing what I love to do, making good money. At the same time, my brother's calling me and saying, why in the world aren't you taking that job? And I was saying, because I want to do this. I want to do it. Now, what I have learned in the past 10 years is to trust God. Because you know where I am now? Here with you, making enough money to have food and more with a beautiful family. And if I had taken that job with Neon, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today, which is a slightly more important. Okay? I learned to trust God. I hope that I can encourage you by that little story that you can learn to trust God also. Remember, this is trusting God. Comments or questions? All right. So, Ruth is single. She's alone and scared. And here comes her, what do you call that? Her what? Knight in shining armor. An old one. Yeah, this guy's retired. He's not even a trainer anymore. He's coming in on crutches. Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And so she went, and she worked. Verse 2, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to his reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. And Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from morning until now, and she has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then Boaz said to Ruth, ladies, calm down now. Boaz said to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go and glean in another field. Furthermore, do not even go from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? And Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth to come to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. And she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, sit by me. No, that's not in there, but he did say, come here, that you may eat of the bread, dip your piece in the bread of the vinegar, your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. And when she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. Do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from bundles and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. I think he likes her. I'm a guy, but I think that he likes her in this. I'm picking up on the vibes here. So she gleaned in the field until evening. She beat out what she had gleaned. It was an ephah of barley, which is about 25 pounds, if you do all the math and come up with about 25 pounds.
Just over half a bushel.
Yeah. So he goes home, she goes home, and says to her mother-in-law, guess what happened to me today? Could you imagine how long that conversation lasted? Okay. So Naomi said, verse 22, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so the others will not fall upon you in the field. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest. So this is about a month and a half, maybe 2 months. So all the time she's going out there and visiting. She lived with her mother-in-law. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now is Boaz not our kinsman, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, and do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be that when he lies down, that you will notice the place where he lies. You shall go over and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what to do. And I'm sorry, we don't have any more time to read this story tonight. Okay. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. She came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Other than what is at face value here, I have no idea what this custom is. Although there is a pun in this. This is a custom that is totally foreign to us, but totally acceptable to them. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid." So spread your covering over your maid. Okay, the word covering here is the same word, wings, that he said, the Lord in whose wings you have sought refuge. It's the same word here. In other words, she seems to be saying, do you remember that conversation back there when you said the Lord is going to provide his wings over me? You're the one. She seems to be hinting that. All right. He said, may you be blessed of the Lord. I skipped a part, huh? So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether rich or poor. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than you. Okay, for explanation, this redeemer relationship, the closer relative has first dibs. So she says, I want you, but he says, well, I want you too, but we've got a problem here. There's another buddy, there's somebody in between. Verse 13, remain this night. When morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning. So he says, I do, essentially right there. Verse 14, so she laid his feet till morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. And she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. What a nice guy. He's telling her, I really like you. Have a lot of food. So she went to the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that she had done for her. She said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. Women, if you're looking for romance in men, know that it is there, okay? Because the guy would not what? He would not rest. You know what he was thinking about the whole time? You're thinking, this guy gave me 6 measures of barley, and that's how he's telling me he likes me? But the whole time, he couldn't get his mind off of her. Don't forget that. Chapter 4, verse 1. Boaz went up to the gate, sat down there, and behold, a close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. For the sake of time, I'm going to skip this part. You read it. They go through a little dickering. Boaz says, you want the field? And the guy says, yes, I do. And then Boaz says, if you take the field, you get the woman, a Moabitess also. And the guy said, oh, no, I can't do that, because if I do, then her son will get my inheritance. And so Boaz says, okay, then I'll take her. And they do the shoe passing custom. Again, no idea what that is, but to them it meant something. Verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. I asked the question, trace the events as they concern Ruth, and then any observations or lessons come from the Ruth part of this story. Anyone? Gary? I know that your mind must be racing.
Well, obviously she trusted in Jehovah, although she didn't really know a lot about Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she was very loyal to Jehovah.
Yeah.
She was hard working.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was a very good woman, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? We could go on, and please do. Okay, I'll go on, and you can interrupt me. Single women. Last time was about old women. Single women, old women can be single, right? Elderly women, I should say. Observation, you might find a husband on the job. That's where she was. I'm not sure what the point is here. Keep your eyes open. I don't know. Really, I don't know what the point is, but it is a fact. You might find a woman on the job. That's where she was. Okay, at the same time, you might have to take a job while waiting to find a husband. That's the situation. She had to provide for her widow. Can you think of a passage in the New Testament that talks about women providing for widows? Those women in that text, you don't know if they're married or not. There are at least two situations where you might have to have a job being a woman. Some people say women should never work. That's going to set up some problems for these women. I'm not saying throw out all the wisdom and all the guidance the Bible says and gives you. But at the same time, let's be fair here, there you might be in a situation where you have to have a job. A woman might be in a situation where she has to have a job, Gary.
And be very careful about that job.
Yeah.
They were very careful where she went.
Yep.
They only sent her to the right place.
Yeah. Yeah, be careful.
She could have fallen amongst, you know, any sort of riffraff. You know, any number of things could have happened to her.
Yeah.
But they only sent her to the right place. Because she knew Boaz. He was well known.
Yeah. 1 Timothy 5:16 talks about the widows. Let me make this point. Wisdom says to be prepared as best as you can. Am I saying that everybody needs to go to college? I am not. I am not saying that at all. But in 2013, especially in this economy, here's somebody who has no degree, and here's somebody who has a degree. Now, you got to be careful. I'm not saying throw out all your wisdom. I'm not saying that. But at the same time, if you have the opportunity to go to college, that might be the best thing for you to do. It might be the wisest. Talked to a guy yesterday at Stewart's. He just got out of the Army. 20 years experience. 20 years experience in IT. And guess what he can't find? A job. So you know what he's doing? He's going to college. Because everybody in this economy is there. I mean, everybody's out there. It's the employer's dream, this economy is. They get to pick and choose whoever they want. If you don't have a degree, you're not going. Again, I'm not saying that you must have a degree. It might be wise for you. Anybody want to say something even wiser than what I have just said about this? What did Ruth not look for in a husband? What did she not look for?
Age, young men.
Age? Wealthy, although he was wealthy, but so the emphasis is on the age, but it does include the wealth when it talks about the age. I think you were going to mumble something. No. What did she not look for, George?
Nothing.
Oh, thank you. I love that. A devotee of Melech. She left Moab. She wasn't. Once she found out whatever it is she found out about Jehovah, she said, I want Jehovah. She didn't settle like Orpah. Orpah, you go back to your people and to your gods. Orpah settled. And by the way, who ended up in the lineage of Jesus, the Savior of the world? The one who did not settle. Young men, whether rich or poor, doesn't say that she wasn't going to marry a young man. It's that he's got to be young and that's it. Right? Boaz, and here we transition a little bit. Boaz could have had anyone he wanted. He was wealthy. He was known. I mean, that guy, he could have had anything. But he was choosy, is the point. And she was looking for somebody who, Boaz was nice. She looked for somebody who was nice. Boaz speaks of the Lord and surrounds himself with people who speak of the Lord. He walks into work, and he says, may you be blessed of the Lord. And they turn around, his employees, and they say, may you be blessed of the Lord. That's what you want. Somebody who's totally surrounded by. We're not taken out of the world, but we surround ourselves by people of faith. Boaz respected the law of Moses and the traditions of men. Whatever that shoe thing was, I have no idea, but it's in his deal.
Whatever the Redeemer thing was, too. Boaz wanted Ruth.
Right.
He says there's one closer, and I've got to check him first.
Right, so that's the law of Moses.
Yeah,
exactly. He respects the law of Moses.
This comes first.
Right, right. The point I was making is he also respects the tradition of men because the shoe thing isn't in the law of Moses. But yet he's obeying it. There's something to be said here. The New Testament tells us that we give honor to whom honor is due, custom to whom custom is due. So far as it depends on you, live with respect in the sight of all people. So we live in a place that has a culture that has customs. And as long as they don't contradict the Lord's commands, we should pay attention to them. right? We live in this culture. Paul became, when he was in Rome, he did as the Romans did, right? Was Boaz good? First of all, what woman, and married women, feel free to answer as well. What would you women marry this guy? Go ahead, Marcy, would you? Yeah, she says yes. So, would you women marry this guy?
Wisdom would say yes.
Yes.
If you take a young woman who doesn't have the wisdom, a really young woman, 16, 17, 18, I don't know.
Yeah,
You know, then she's a little bit older than that. She's
yeah.
married. You know, and she has some more wisdom. Wisdom would say marry this guy.
Yeah, wisdom would say marry this guy. Was he good looking? We don't know. That's exactly right. We don't know. We have no clue. And that's the point. He's. What are we looking for? Yes?
And it didn't look like Ruth really was... Ruth didn't have that as one of the important things. I mean, because... I mean, that wasn't more important than a godly man.
Right, right. Ruth wasn't looking... apparent. Well, we don't know. He might have been... We don't know.
Right,
he might have been...
Right,
her priorities. Old single men. Don't ever give up hope. Just in case it happens, it doesn't apply to anybody in here. Well, Ethan's getting older.
How old is old?
I don't know. Don't ever give up hope, right? Young single men? Or whatever, all single men. What did Boaz look for in a wife? Yeah, what did he? A girl who recognized and trusted in Jehovah. In Moab, she said Jehovah, and then she said, I'm all in. I'm going. Right? And he said, you've put yourself under his wings. You're trusting in Jehovah. A girl who would not settle for less than a Jehovah devotee. She doesn't want somebody of Melech. She wants somebody who is of Jehovah. Right? Under whose wings you have come to seek refuge, you've read this. A girl should be so lost in God that a man must seek God in order to find her. That is perfect. You can't say it better than that. And that's what Ruth was. She was getting to be so lost in God. She was immature, but she was lost in God as much as she could be. Virtuous, as you say. A girl who knows and appeals to God's law. She recognized that he was a redeemer. No, she learned it, but once she learned it, she appealed to it, didn't she? Hey, there's a law. A girl of good reputation, we made that point. A girl whose care for others manifested itself in deeds. She cared for Naomi, and everybody knew it. Guys, who would marry her? I would.
They'd only been there a few months, and everybody knows it.
Right.
Look at the short time. They've been there years. They've only been there 2 months.
Yeah.
Everybody
knows who this person is. She's a superstar, becoming one. Was she good looking? She's a worker, as Gary said earlier. Was she good looking? In my case, she was. But we don't know, do we? It doesn't matter, because she was marriage material. Let me just make this point before we close, because this is a huge part of the book of Ruth. Any comments or questions so far of anything? All right, the closest relative. I asked the question, what did the closest relative miss out on and why? He missed out on this girl. And we assume that he would have been in the lineage of Jesus. I don't know if that's exactly what God would have done. Maybe if she'd married him, something else would happen. He would at least have missed out on this woman. Why? Because of his selfishness. That's why. Oh, I don't want her. If I have her, then if she has an offspring, then I've got to give some of what I have to him. And misses out on this woman who's going to help him get into heaven. Don't let your selfishness get in the way of that. But, having said that, the closest relative, this redeemer thing. Redeemer?
Yeah.
Right? Do I have to say any more? Turn to Leviticus 25. There is a picture that is painted by the Redeemer scenario. We'll just read the one verse, and then we'll call it a night. Maybe you have a comment or question. Leviticus 25:25. If a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor that he has to sell part of his property, or if you go on to read the text, even himself, into slavery, then his nearest kinsman will come to buy back what his relative had sold. Okay, this guy's so poor. Now, there are different scenarios where they can actually get money to buy themselves out. But the ultimate picture is, this guy is so poor, he cannot buy himself out of slavery. What does he need somebody to do? Come and buy his freedom. Okay, so the wages of sin is death. We are slaves of sin. The only who here can buy their way out of sin? So we need somebody to redeem us. And Galatians and 1 Peter calls, and other places, call Jesus our Redeemer. And he was made like us in flesh. Hebrews chapter 2, Hebrews chapter 6. So he could be our kinsman. He's part of, he's family. So he can pay for us. That picture, which is hinted at, the picture is hinted at in Leviticus 25. The picture is very clearly seen in the book of Ruth. You look at it, you say, hey, wait a minute, here comes the Redeemer, buys back the one that can't buy themselves out of their problems, their situation. And that's a picture of what Jesus does with the church. Is that clear, relatively?
Imagine what our situation would be if Christ had done the same thing as that man had done and given up on redeeming us because he was selfish and didn't want to go on the cross. And if he hadn't done that, we would be in a bad way.
If Jesus hadn't, we'd be in a bad way. That's exactly right. We'd be in a bad way. Now, I find it ironic that Ethan and I just came up with the same point. No, because we're all reading out of the same book. Who has... Yes, apparently. So if you have an announcement...